yes. From the Maritimes, too.
I'd like to get the meeting back to order, please.
Just to give you a compliment.
That's what they said.
Okay, please assume your seat so we can get started. We are on number 5, Migratory Waterfowl Seasons Regulations and Hunter Education Instructor Turkey Incentive Permits Briefing and Public Hearing. Mr. Spragans.
Thank you, Commissioners and Director Suswin. I'm here to brief you on two different WACs, one that is within my section and one that is not. So the first one that I'll present on, which will be brief, is WAC 220-416-010. This is under the Small Game and Other Wildlife Seasons and Regulations, but it specifically has to do with the Hunter Education Instructor Incentive Permits that are provided under Turkey, Section E, Subsection D, or Roman numeral 5. And the recommendation here is just to add 2 spring turkey hunter education instructor incentive permits, bringing the total from 2 to 4 individuals that will be drawn for this particular permit. Public comment, as it went out to public comment, there were 139 comments received, and 92 generally agreed, or 66% of the overall comments. 26 were neutral, and 11 generally did not agree. You want to go home then? That is what it is.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
So, Kyle,
yeah.
Why did the people who do not agree do not agree?
Most of those comments were based in sort of the nuisance perspective, okay. Viewing them as a nuisance. Okay. So that's it on that. If there's any, okay. And so. So this is WAC 220-416-060. Again, I'm Kyle Spragans, the Waterfowl Section Manager out of Olympia. This WAC is specific to updating the 2020-2021 Migratory Game Bird Seasons and Regulations. That includes waterfowl, dove, bandtail pigeon, coot, and snipe. I was able to brief the Commission earlier this morning about some of the process behind it. And so I'll go quickly through this, is just that in terms of migratory game bird regulations, the ultimate authority lies with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that provide the federal frameworks and sort of the unbendable rules of season length, such as 107 total days for any one species, the earliest opening, the latest closing dates. For ducks, that's a hard January 31st end date. And for something like geese, the hard end date is March 10th. That is all underneath the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. But we also work through the upper bag limits that are set under national strategies and collectively through the Pacific Flyway Council process. That starts back in August for the types of regulations that we're talking about here at this meeting. They work their ways through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service the SRC, the Service Regulations Committee. And then within that, the state decides discretion, how the WAC might fit within these federal frameworks with regards to things like season timing that are within those frameworks and certain bag limits that could be more restrictive but not more liberal. This particularly pertains to some of the ducks, like sea ducks, that we have restrictive bag limits under. All this has to be turned around for season selection that must be published in the Federal Register in late April. And then what we physically hand people as the hunting regulations pamphlet that we attempt to get out by July 1st every year. So to go into it, duck populations and goose populations are dealt with slightly differently. So I'll start with ducks. Duck populations, the status of that, those are the culmination of large-scale aerial surveys undertaken by partners both with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service but other state agencies. These vast transects have been flown for long periods of time as for the national surveys, the image down in the lower right, that data set, that stream dates back to 1955. There have been modifications in our state and the other western states to kind of add better supplementary data regarding mallard status and other dabbling ducks. which we fly every spring, summer time to help inform that decision, that decision process. In general, on those transects, they are, while they're logging information about the ducks, they are also logging information about the habitat conditions. Not surprisingly, waterfowl need water, and so the condition of wetlands and ponds out on the landscape is a major driver in the annual and long-term fluctuations that we see in certain, particularly dabbling and diving duck populations. So during that, during the most recent effort that we have available breeding data, the conditions and the total duck numbers were very similar to 2018. However, the total duck count was 38.9 million, which is 6% below the 2018, so a little bit lower than the previous year, but it is still 10% above that long-term average that stretches back to 1955. I would note that all 10 principal ducks, the 10 species that get pooled together for the total duck count, have come down off of peaks, mostly during 2015 or 16, but all 10 of them have come off of that. So we're coming off of an all-time high, and we will see where that trajectory takes us here in the future.
Mr. Smith?
Yeah, Kyle, just a quick question.
Yeah.
The 10 principal, within those 10, I imagine some are declining more than the others,
That is correct. Yeah, and I'll touch on that.
Oh, okay, thank you.
I guess what I will mention is that, so the two graphs that are provided in that lower frame, total ducks is on the left, that's the culmination of all 10, which nearly peaked at 50 million ducks during that 2015 spike. Mallard is a huge contributor in that number. During that peak, that was approximately 12 million mallard. Mallard, not surprisingly, is a driver for a lot of the decisions on the national stage in terms of the season lengths, the bag limits, and that sort of thing. However, as alluded to by Commissioner Smith, there are certain species that are problematic and do not trend well with mallard as sort of the indicator. In particular, two of those species are the northern pintail and the aggregate of scop, both lesser and greater scop. As you can see on the long-term timeline, particularly as it relates to northern pintail. Northern pintail are below their long-term average of 4 million birds as of this last status check, and they are significantly below numbers that were recorded long ago in the 50s and 60s. And because of that, this latest status population check, northern pintail came in at 2.2 million birds. That's 42% below the long-term average, and it's the ninth lowest ever recorded for the species. For scop, which are more lesser scop are more boreal nesters, graters are more tundra edge nesters. We have seen long-term trends, largely driven more by lesser scop, but overall scop are down to 28% below that long-term average, that dashed line. And this is the fifth lowest count ever recorded since 1955 for this group. Because of those two, there are national strategies that are also built specific to these species, pintail and scop, and that inform us about the harvest options that are available. So while the overall season structure set by mallards is relatively positive, very positive, in particular with these two, northern pintail, we are what puts us into this one bird daily bag limit, which is the same as last year, but we maintain it going into this next season. And the scop drops to a restrictive regulation package, which still maintains an 86-day season length, which is similar to how it's been in the past, but it drops the daily bag limit from 3 to 2. So the national strategy indicates that scop would be at a 2-bird daily bag limit.
Excuse me, Kyle. Commissioner Lindvall has a question.
Yeah.
So on the northern pintail, and maybe this is just my sense and it's not actually accurate, seems like people are more excited about shooting a pintail than they are a scop. Do you think that's a fair thing?
That is fair.
So on bag limits, does restricting bag limits, do you feel that does anything for scop? I don't know if asking that very well. But
no, I understand. Yeah, so these national strategies that I'm mentioning, there are actually documents that sit behind both of those that have evaluated that very question. Certainly, your point is right, that pintail kind of is a more broadly viewed species of interest in terms of harvest in the bag. Because of that, that is why that one is held at a national strategy. Whatever happens in the Pacific Flyway or any particular state is happening everywhere. So Texas and the Mississippi Flyway are also experiencing one bird pintail. With Scott, yes, you're right. It is much more seasonal. Diving ducks don't tend to enter into the bag until later, but there is certainly past data that indicates how much total harvest happens under certain bag limit options that we've experienced, and so that's essentially what feeds into that decision.
Thank you,
Commissioner Smith.
Yeah, just a quick one too.
Pintail's more of a puddle duck too, so I mean, you know, scaup is more open water, so he would. If you're going after scaup, normally you got to target them, I mean, more.
That is correct. So in terms of the overlap of the resource and the availability or opportunity for hunters to intersect that resource, pintail is a much more readily available in, species. And because of that, there is definitely a relationship between the bag limit and the total number. I would point out that in the maps of habitat condition, particularly the southern Alberta, southern Saskatchewan, which in 19 starts turning into this more yellow-red, that is particularly the hub of northern pintail sort of breeding core. So if that starts going yellow-red, things are probably not going to be good for pintail. There is a very high correlation between habitat and pintail status. Those figures come in from the national level. I mentioned that we here in Washington also conduct our own breeding surveys. In that mallard version of the world that sets the outer bags, we are in this orange group over here, the Western Mallard Model, which takes in information from British Columbia, Washington, Oregon, and California, and leverages that against breeding status of mallard up in Alaska. We here in Washington actually stayed pretty level, only a 1% increase from the previous year, putting our breeding index at 126,243. The way that our survey is conducted, it wasn't until 2010 that we switched to this much more standardized transect base that allowed us to make comparisons with BC, Oregon, and California, as well as Alaska. That is viewed here in the switch to the bar graphs. Red is eastern, purple is the western Washington component of that. So we do have mallard that feed in from both sides of the state. We've remained relatively stable. However, Alaska was down 20%, and all of the other Southern Pacific Flyway zones were also down in this number. certainly that played in because of water conditions and rain drought conditions in certain areas. We benefited from some late snow flurries 2 years ago and some sort of delayed water on the ground, which allowed birds to kind of set up shop in eastern Washington particularly. With that, all that taken into account in that national strategy, we are what lands at this option of the maximum 107 days allowed for duck hunting, 7 ducks in the total bag limit. 7 of those may be mallard, and no more than 2 may be hen mallard within the selection that comes out. With all that, that is how we basically establish our what does our season look like. We go to the last Sunday in January because we want to end on a weekend. We date back 107 days. We must remove 2 days for the special opportunity provided to youth and, as of last season, the veteran and active military. That leaves us with 105 days, mandating a 2-day closure towards the beginning of the season. And so all of that is very similar to last year's structure. The calendar jog makes it that January 31st lands on a Sunday. That causes some perception change in the calendar and shoves things later that happen afterwards. So the youth and veteran Saturday that happened after the season this year for the first time would be pushed to February 6th. But again, it's just the Saturday following the end of the season. That one-day veteran and active military hunt would overlap the second, the later youth hunt. And so we're still at this 105 general day season, but because of that calendar jog, it would start on October 17th, Saturday, October 17th. Within the bag limits, as I said, we're at the sort of max available, seven ducks, no more than two hen mallard, no more than one pintail, which is maintained from last year's or this the season that just ended, two redhead, two canvasback, and then the dropped two scop. Again, the 86 days has been how the scop season is operated. That season opens Saturday, November 7th. We backload the season. Scop don't tend to come down until later, so we try to intersect resource and opportunity as best as we can, but the bag limit will drop to two. With regards to the sea ducks, there's no additional restrictions compared to what our normal proposal indicates.
Is the season limit just for the Harlequin?
The Harlequin is the one with the one season limit. That is correct. I did want to make mention of the youth, veteran, and active military special hunt that happened this year on Saturday, February 1st. That came as sort of a late in the game change based on some federal policy, federal regulation and policy that came down between the briefing and adoption meeting last year. It was very well received. It's the first time, so everybody's still learning it. I would make a particular shout out to the National Wildlife Refuge System, who through a lot of coordination over the 8 months leading into that one day, was able to maintain all of the refuges that have a waterfowl program open on that Saturday. That was a huge deal. They absorb a huge number of days in Washington, and so without that, it would have been a bit of a struggle, but in general, well-received. The two cards are from two of the private land access sites that up in the Skagit County, which also managed to remain open during that time, and as the field staff said, anytime there's an exclamation point not preceded by an expletive, you know that you've done something good. So I think we did well. The one thing that we are adding is better description of sort of the required documentation for veterans and active military. That guidance wasn't clear nor really available at the time of publishing the pamphlet last year. This year, there's better guidance of the documents that would be asked of someone to prove. So I'll end there on the duck side. Okay, that moves us into goose populations, which is a little more straightforward. Goose populations and seasons are structured under Pacific Flyway Council management plans. These plans are negotiations between the 11 Western states that participate in the Pacific Flyway and our federal partners and certainly our international partners in Canada and in this case, for particularly for Washington, in Russia, regarding Wrangell Island, Russia. The different species of geese are tracked differently depending on sort of the way that we can monitor on breeding grounds versus wintering areas. Of course, the main, our only breeding goose here in Washington is Western Canada geese, the one on the left. They breed statewide. Certainly, there is a larger distribution of them in Eastern Washington. We are able to pick up Western Canada geese on those aerial flights that we conduct for the duck counts, and so we are able to actually have this long-term trend. And similar to the ducks, we are at a fairly high count in eastern, particularly in eastern Washington, but statewide for Western Canada geese. Because they are local, they do move throughout the state. They do actually go up to Alberta, so the resident local term is not actually completely appropriate. But we have to leverage that status with the status of other migratory birds that are Canada and cackling geese, the white cheek complex. The one in the center is cackling goose, which nests out on the western Alaska on the YK Delta. That population has maintained fairly steady. There is certainly some noise in that data, but the management plan guides us that once they drop below a certain, below 250,000, we need to start thinking about other precautions. They have dropped below that, so we sit right at this line of teetering of understanding where we're at, and that is all leveraged against the one closure that we have in geese, dusky Canada geese on the right there. That's a southwest Canada or southwest Washington topic, the Goose Management Area 2. There are only about 15,000 dusky Canada geese compared to 250,000 cacklers. So the opportunity to make mistakes is high, so we try to minimize that risk at all costs. We undertake extensive survey efforts with these neck-collared individuals to get to derive survival estimates for this particular population. That, the Canada cackling goose, which is the most complex because of balancing that, is then stacked against the other two goose types that we have here in Washington, the white geese, which includes snow and Rosses, and then white-fronted geese, which are more migrants heading from Alaska down to Central Valley, California, and Mexico, but certainly we have birds that stop down here. These graphics are actually put on the same axis, and while it might be hard to actually read the numbers, the point is that the magnitude starts increasing as you get over towards the white fronts, and that is partly why the bag limit structure is the way it is. We are trying to intersect resource and timing of opportunity of the season as much as we possibly can, particularly to address certain issues revolving around high cackling goose numbers, increasing snow goose numbers in certain areas of the state, and an overall population status of greater white fronts, which is two times the objective. And so anything that we contribute to trying to help with that population, Washington is attempting to do. I will specifically call out the one proposal that's related to geese. So all the bag limits are proposed to stay the same, 4 for cackling Canada, 6 for snow geese, 10 for white-fronted geese. I will call out the issue that was mentioned during the morning public comment. There is a rapidly evolving issue here in the Columbia Basin, specifically as it relates to white geese. As more information becomes available, we are starting to realize that these geese are also tied to the Wrangell Island population. So these are tied to Wrangell Island, Russia. That requires much higher levels of conversation amongst the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the lateral, the tri and beyond lateral agreements that happen as a result of the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. However, there are tools at our disposal to try and at least preemptively get season to align resource and the opportunity. Last year, we made the shift of putting days from the early part of the season into February here in Goose Management Area 4. What is occurring is that there's a large number of birds that are starting to stay over winter. This is largely associated down in the Boardman area, Cardi Reservoir, and over in the Cold Springs. And then they flush back up into the basin as temperatures increase, green cover crops or green growth of some sort starts coming online. That is when geese shift to those types of food resources and they scatter out. Last year's count, or the 2018 count for this group of white geese in Goose Management Area 4 was 52,000. That's a coordinated effort between Washington and Oregon. This year's same count, the synchronized fly-off was 160,000 during that same time period. There was a high production, an exceptional production that came off of Wrangell Island, Russia, so not surprisingly, many of those flocks have high gray birds, young of the year birds. These juveniles are more prone to explore new areas and set up shops in different parts of the state that they've never been before. We were trying to preemptively get ahead of that, not knowing that there would be that kind of boom in the production, but certainly this is an area that has caught our eye and we are aware of, and we're trying to do the best we can to align that ability. There's the recommendation to shift one more week from the beginning of the season towards the end of the season, to better, as those birds are just starting to come up in the Columbia Basin in February. Because this is so new, we are just learning what does that look like. We are taking steps to try and evaluate that. The original proposal that was provided in the language was modified based off of the public input comments. Originally, we had put that segment, the additional 7 days towards the end of the segment, which would have pushed it all the way to March 10th. There are high concerns about the fact, well, several things. One, descriptions of smaller flocks of these snow geese interacting with Canadas and cacklers. So this is a white goose only season. You're only supposed to shoot white geese. The potential of shooting something that you're not supposed to shoot is high, especially in those mixed flocks. There are concerns because as you start getting into March, other things are starting to migrate back through the Columbia Basin, such as tundra swans wintering down in the lower Columbia, as well as trumpeter swans coming back from Malheur National Wildlife Refuge in eastern Oregon. There was some issue raised, though I don't have confirmation on that, of potential incidental harvest of swan during this season that just closed. But the more concerning and the last one that is why we decided to shift that week to the beginning of this last third segment, it was because of the management strategies that are undertaken by a lot of our particularly federal land partners that are oriented towards providing food for migrating cranes back through the Columbia Basin. It's common practice to keep standing corn and knock it down to provide immediate food resource, particularly for cranes during this spring period. We are working with the National Wildlife Refuge to try to figure out what that means, because that obviously creates a baiting situation as it relates to the potential of snow goose hunting, but it also is a highly needed management strategy for other migratory birds of concern. We felt shoving it all the way to March 10th was not appropriate at this point, as we're still learning more. But we do feel that the seven additional days in this time period are appropriate. So the proposal now shifts it to February 13th to March 3rd, which would basically be very similar to this year, but starting one week earlier. Brant seasons, no proposed changes. We have four counties that are online that allow brant harvest. We mandate a harvest report card to keep track of total harvest because of how geographically isolated sort of the opportunity is. Season dates, just as calendar falls this year, would land somewhere between January 16th to the 31st, except in Pacific County, which has the opportunity to start a little bit earlier. Depending on the county, the number of days that are actually attributable to that season changes. I would mention that the youth, veteran, and active military hunt also on that Saturday, February 6th, because of its placement on the calendar, also provides opportunity for brant harvest, which is a very unique experience. We did get report that there were several people that took advantage of that, several positive interactions. It was quite windy during this time period, so there was also a lot of concern about safety and just sort of whether or not people really had the opportunity to take advantage of. With regards to the other migratory birds that are underneath this WAC, band-tailed pigeon, dove, coot, snipe, there are no recommended changes to season dates or bag limits. And finally, in terms of public comment, there were 129 comments that were received related to this topic. 54 generally agreed with the suggested changes, 66 were neutral, and 9 generally did not agree. Most of the themes in those comments were about the maintained lower northern pintail bag limit and the reduced scop bag limits. Again, those are controlled by national harvest strategies, and there are concerns about those populations right now. There were suggestions about the snow goose season's timing and bag limits, particularly as it related to that Goose Management Area 4. And then just overall, there was some confusion about the season dates and federal frameworks. There were a lot of requests to move the duck season into February, which is not legally possible. And with that, I will stop it there. And if there's any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thanks. That's interesting. Larry's happy that coots are still available. On the national or in the federal duck stamp, do you know numbers in terms of sales over the last few years?
Federal duck stamp?
Yeah.
There's been a little bit of a bounce up. There's been a lot of efforts to broaden sort of the marketing of who can buy those. A lot of people are not aware that anybody can buy a federal duck stamp. You can go to a post office and buy a federal duck stamp. You do not have to be a hunter. Federal duck stamp acts as a access pass onto national wildlife refuges. If you hold one, you can go on the auto tour and not pay anything. A lot of people don't know that. So there has been better efforts. It's certainly down compared to the 70s overall, but there have been actually gains in the federal duck.
My question was really kind of getting at duck hunter numbers.
Yeah.
My gut says that those are probably down nationally nationally,
there is a large trend down. I would suggest, though, from our migratory bird permit sales, the state duck stamp, we have maintained fairly steady. I would say we don't actually mimic the national trend, but certainly there is a big sway depending on the type of year it is. If it's a good hunting year, we see more people suddenly decide to be a duck hunter. And in really dry, mild years like this year, there's a large component of the duck hunting population that sits out for the season.
Do you have an offhand guesstimate of how many states?
We sell approximately 45 to 48,000 migratory bird permits in this state.
Okay.
That puts us about ninth nationally in terms of duck hunters.
Okay, thanks.
February 6th is a few days after the end of the season, so I hope we're planning some good public relations and outreach on that date. It seems like it could raise some issues.
The youth hunt. February 6th. So yeah, and that's what I meant by the calendar jog is that it is no different than this year, except for because of the January 31st being the Sunday.
Right.
Yes. It looks later. It is later, but it is a week after the close of the season. So from that standpoint, it's no different. Yes, there should be better communication about sort of, hey, beware. And certainly the relationship with the National Wildlife Refuge, it helped that.
Yeah.
For sure. And so we will make sure to kind of better describe what the yeses and nos of what you can do and sort of what's available out there.
And it just seems like it should be generally directed so that, you know, broad public understands that we've got people out shooting ducks.
Certainly.
A few days after the rest of the season closes.
Can do.
Kyle, as always, job well done.
Okay, thank you very much.
Have a good work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any of the commissioners, tonight, tomorrow, Sunday, I'm around. If you wanted to come by, you don't even have to get off the blacktop. I'll show you. And if you wanted to take a tour, I would love to show you our property. It's a little slice of heaven, and be happy to do that. I'm around the whole time. And then my last comment would be the youth and veterans hunt. And I did not take youth this year, but we had a full slate of veterans, and it was fantastic. It's the first time I've ever heard universally, not positive, but ecstatic comment on any hunting season. So that was a really great thing, and I'm glad we implemented that. So, yeah.
If I may, your first comment about the 2 days.
Yes.
Earlier versus later. Have you spoken to Kyle about that? Just today? Or no?
He's well aware of my thoughts.
Okay. And you're going to
get the answer is yes.
Okay. All right. Commissioner Linville?
When you did the veterans hunt, just to sort of, can you, so that was you volunteering the ranch for that hunt, is that correct?
Correct, yeah. We
didn't charge the...
Oh, no. So the ranch is not a fee area, and we have done a veterans hunt. I wish I could put it up there. You would be amazed that every year we have this giant American flag, and we have between 20 and 30 people come hunt every year. And the reason I'm on the closure is because for years I would have the veterans hunt the first Wednesday of season, and we would hunt that afternoon because I had 2 days of rest. So that's not why I'm commenting on it, but it just coincidentally, the ranch's veterans hunt had nothing to do with the season, but we just offered it to vets, and we have had, it's my favorite day of the year. I'm from a military family, and it's amazing. So I've had from lieutenant generals to corporals, and it's great.
Good for you.
Thanks. I just wanted to make sure that people understood that.
Yeah, no, we do it because we want to honor them for their service.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. Oh, 1 second. Commissioner McKay, you got a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe a question for staff as much as you, but the question is whether or not this alternative of changing the days will be before us as a choice in April. So I can't scroll back quite quickly enough to the wildlife presentation to see if this is one of several options that will be in front of us in April, or whether we would need to add this option here at this meeting to have it be in front of us in April.
Mr. Chairman, Commission, yes. What I would say is in April we would come in and present our normal the recommendations you've seen, and then any response to any public input we've received since we came to you today, including today's testimony. So we can include in what we present to you in April response to this particular comment and have the Commission have the opportunity to weigh in there. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
You bet.